Hello and welcome back to Leader Up, a podcast of Army Management Staff College. Leader Up is a professional conversation where we discuss a broad range of leadership and leader development topics with an emphasis on the Army civilian professional. I'm your host, David Howley. And on today's episode of Leader Up, we're going to talk about critical thinking and creative thinking. And our guest today is Dr. Robert Arp, who is one of the faculty folks here at AMSC, one of my peers that I work with down in the academic support and distance learning. And so, Dr. Arp, thank you for joining us today. We're really happy to have you on Leader Up.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Okay, and so tell our audience just a little bit about kind of your background and what you do in Army Management Staff College.
Sure. So I'm 53 years old, and my parents sent me to the high school and college seminary to study to be a Catholic priest for like 9 years. And through theology, I got into philosophy and got a BA in philosophy and an MA in philosophy in 92 and 93. Then I taught high school religion and met my wife, and then got married and started grad school at St. Louis University in St. Louis, Missouri, and got a PhD in philosophy, and then was teaching as a philosophy professor in Minnesota and down in Florida at Florida State. And then I did a postdoc to build these things, to learn how to build these things called ontologies in the information science sense. And that postdoc program was a feeder into government contract work in D.C. And so in 2008 through 2010, I worked with the Air Force as a government contractor doing data modeling kind of work and business analyst kind of work, and then moved and started working with the Army in 2011 and did some work in the operational environment laboratory of TRISA at that time, which eventually got dissolved and is now TRADOC G2. And eventually moved over to Mission Command CDID, capabilities integration development, and started doing capabilities development work. And eventually said, hey, I want to get back into teaching if at all possible. And so at the same time during the pandemic, I got a government job, a GS-12 job as a security manager, and then was starting to put my resume together so I could teach, ultimately get MEL-4 accreditation and teach through CGSC. And my resume wound up in the hands of folks here at AMSC, and then started teaching here in 2021. And have been interested in leadership development. And what I do at AMSC is I teach lessons in leadership, critical thinking, ethics. And so as a philosopher, the way in which I'd like to describe it is just as a medical doctor goes to med school to learn about anatomy and physiology, how they work, how to treat them, so too somebody who goes to get their PhD in philosophy goes to grad school to learn about and diagnose arguments, logic, critical thinking, and reasoning. So, and just as an MD always uses the basics from med school in every interaction with patients, right, throughout his or her career, so too a philosopher uses arguments, logic, reasoning, and critical thinking in basically every area of life. Yeah. So that's why it's kind of like our bread and butter. Those of us who are trained philosophers, critical thinking is like all of what we do. And creative thinking, I got into as a result of philosophy of mind, philosophy of biology, and creative problem solving with my dissertation, first book, and several first articles that I put together.
And so you're unique, at least in our department. You're unique in that you came into government service as a member of the Army Civilian Corps with no military background and really no connection to the Army. And I'm just curious, what's that been like for you, and how have you seen your background of benefit maybe to those of us who spent a career in the military? Do you see a difference between us? And so what's your experience been like?
Oh, yeah. No, that's definitely, as a matter of fact, I was hired with the Air Force as a contractor specifically because I didn't have any kind of Air Force background. And then when I was hired here by Ben Jordan and Trissa Operational Environment Laboratory, I mean, I was hired specifically because, again, he wanted a person on the team with a perspective that wasn't hampered, as he said, by Army background and culture. So my experience has been one of, it's a combination of it's good and bad, right? Bad at times that I don't understand the culture, and so I may put my foot in my mouth. But good in that I have no problems walking into the 06 office and bypassing
right
the major sitting out in front that is his XO. I've had a learning curve just like anybody would, but I've been doing this 13 years now. The acronyms, as we know, right, are difficult to kind of at meetings, one of the things I like to do is, you know, when we go around and people realize, okay, I don't have an Army background, and somebody will be like, AMSC, and I'll be like, what does that stand for? And they're like, Army Management Staff College. And then I'll be like, what does Army stand for again? ARMY. So they always gets a laugh. But so in terms of critical thinking and creative thinking, there have been times in meetings and when I've been part of committees and part of teams where my perspective was a different voice and was helpful. And then there have been times when it's because I don't understand the culture, my voice has been a kind of like, duh, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, he just doesn't get it because he wasn't part of the culture, wasn't part of the upbringing, that kind of thing. But for the most part, people I've worked with have said that they benefited from my particular perspective. And humor is something, and sometimes a lack of chain of command, those kinds of things have been actually beneficial for me in my teaching in terms of interacting with students, because the Army is very serious when it comes to meetings and whatnot. It's like, let's get down to business, let's get things done, and I like to inject humor whenever I possibly can. And again, I'm not afraid to jump the chain of command, although that, you know, has gotten me in trouble at times. So,
but you do. I definitely see that you see things a little bit differently from the way the rest of us do, and you kind of go about things in a way that's a little bit different that I think is needed, and I think it's very beneficial.
It's been fun. I worked at the Mission Command Battle Lab for many years. And we'd have all these experiments, these tabletop exercises, wargaming. And I was always the unified action partner, specifically like the university, you know. The Army works with these unified action partners and as consults when they're on missions and operations. And so I always played that role. So it was fun.
And so let's talk about a little bit more about critical thinking and creative thinking. Just maybe a little bit more about you talked about some of your publications, books that you've written. maybe just a little bit more about things that you've done over the past 20, 30 years that kind of prepare you to teach people about critical and creative thinking.
Yeah, so we should probably define critical thinking and creative thinking, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Go right ahead. That's next on my list, so let's get to it.
So I've prepared myself. Let's start with some Army doctrine here, and we'll start with critical thinking. I appreciate ADP 622, Army Leadership in the Profession. There's a quotation here. A leader's mental abilities affect how well they think and lead others. Intellect enables leaders to think creatively and critically to gain situational understanding, make sound judgments, solve problems, and take action. That's great. But ADP 6-0, Mission Command and Control of Army Forces, defines critical thinking as well, it's not really a definition, but it determines whether adequate justification exists to accept conclusions as true based on a given inference or argument. Critical thinkers apply judgment about what to believe or what to do in response to facts, experience, or arguments. So that's the money quotation there, because critical thinking, by definition, is the science of correct reasoning, which entails making explicit the concepts and principles associated with argument analysis, premises, conclusions, evidence for claims, fallacies and checking for them, making sure all of your premises in an argument are true, making sure your conclusion follows from your premises. So really it's critical thinking centers on the argument. That's the bread and butter of critical thinking. And an argument is a set of claims, one of which is known as the conclusion, and if the conclusion is supposed to be supported or justified or demonstrated by another claim known as a premise. So a claim is a statement, a proposition, a sentence that is either true or false, and it's shown to be true or false through evidence. And evidence itself can take the form of direct testimony of the senses or indirect testimony of the senses. It could be testimony of others. But a critical thinker, anytime he or she makes a claim, has to make sure that that claim is true by virtue of evidence. And you can also show claims to be false by virtue of evidence. So if I said to you, the earth is flat, that's a false claim. And what's the evidence for that? Well, direct sense evidence, mathematical reasoning, scientific reasoning. I look at a ship as it gets further from me in the horizon and I see that it disappears, which shows that the earth is not flat, it's round. But let's just say I wanted to convince you or persuade you of a claim that I have. Now we're moving in the realm of an argument, and the claim that I'm trying to persuade or convince you about is the conclusion of the argument. And oftentimes I'll ask, or a critical thinker will ask, why are you making that claim? What's the justification for that claim? What's the reasoning that led you to that claim? And that's where the premises of an argument come in. And a premise is a claim that is supposed to support or justify or demonstrate the conclusion. And so there you have the nuts and bolts of an argument. But it doesn't end there. You've got to make sure that your conclusion does in fact follow from your premise or premises. And if it doesn't, you're committing what is known as a fallacy. And then you got to make sure all of your premises are in fact true. And when we're reasoning, we can think that the conclusion follows necessarily or absolutely from a premise or premises. Then we're doing deductive reasoning. Or we can think that a conclusion follows with a degree of likelihood or probability only, then we're doing inductive reasoning. So on Sunday, before I watched the Chiefs game, I said to my wife, the Chiefs are going to win, right?
And that's a claim.
Exactly, which happened to be a conclusion of an argument, because she asked me, why, what makes you say that? And I said, well, Chiefs have better stats generally than the Broncos. The Chiefs have Mahomes, who the Broncos have, right? The Chiefs have Kelce, right? So that's why I draw the conclusion that they're going to win. And that's in the inductive realm because I didn't bet my life on the fact that they're going to win. You know, I didn't say it's going to happen with apodictic certainty because what ended up happening?
They got beat.
They got beat, right, right. So on the other hand, if I made a deductive argument, I might say something like, my dog is a mammal. All mammals are warm-blooded. Therefore, my dog is warm-blooded, right? So my daughter asked me one time, you know, why is Luna so warm? I said, well, she's warm-blooded. She said, why is she warm-blooded? I said, well, she's a dog, and dogs are mammals. Mammals are warm-blooded, and that's why she's warm-blooded, and she feels warm. And so that kind of an argument is such that the conclusion absolutely necessarily follows from the premises that I gave. So it's deductive in the deductive realm. So basically, critical thinking is all about determining whether somebody is putting forward an argument, understanding the basic parts of the argument, diagnosing the argument to make sure that the argument's conclusion follows from premises, checking to see if it's deductive or inductive, and
Tell me the difference again, or tell our audience the difference, because I kind of struggle with this, the difference between inductive and deductive. Can you just kind of go through that?
Sure, yeah. It has to do with the inference from premise to conclusion. If we think that inference is made with absolute certainty, such that no other conclusion could possibly follow, then it's deductive. If, on the other hand, we think that that inference is made with a degree of probability only, kind of like 0% to 100% likelihood or probability, then it's inductive.
Right. Okay.
So anytime we make predictions about the future, chances are that's inductive because the conclusions we draw are going to be such that they're going to be deal in a realm of probability or likelihood. So like the one I gave about the Chiefs will win. Why will the Chiefs win? Because the Chiefs have better stats than the Broncos, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, I draw the conclusion the Chiefs will win. I don't say they're absolutely going to win, you know, that there's no doubt that they're going to win.
It's highly probable.
It's highly probable.
And so what if I say, well, I think the Chiefs are going to win because they have won against the Broncos every game since 2015.
That's great. That's another the because you gave is an example of a premise, and then you'd back that up with evidence.
And that's a fact. That's what I said about 20. That you can't dispute that part.
That's right.
And so if I say that, is that inductive or deductive?
You're still in the inductive realm, right, the way in which you formed that argument.
Yeah. Because it's not a guarantee. There's a likelihood, a strong likelihood or something like that.
Right, okay. Exactly.
And what about creative thinking?
Okay, yeah.
Because when I hear critical thinking and creative thinking, I think it may be – some folks might say, well, those are different. They sound different. And they are different, but they are also related. Am I right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. They're different, but they're related. Okay, so how are they different? All right. In terms of creative thinking, I've got a quotation here from Army's leadership and the profession, ADP 622. Creative thinking involves thinking in innovative ways using imagination, insight, and novel ideas. So that's the focus here is on innovation, and also ADP 6-0 Mission Command Creative Thinking involves thinking in new, innovative ways using imagination, insight, and different ideas. So coming up with something new to solve a problem. So any kind of genius, any kind of inventions that people have come up with through human history have utilized creative thinking in order to do so. So it's like when I dropped my Hot Wheel car down the drain and I could see it and I couldn't reach my fingers down there, I went into the house, I grabbed a spatula, put some tape on the end, and then I stuck it down there in the storm drain and pulled it out, right? I had never before taken a spatula, had never before taken tape and stuck it to the spatula, never before had seen this kind of problem, and I was able to do that. So there's something about human consciousness that we're able to kind of put these two ideas or more ideas together in wholly novel ways. So in 1844, Dr. Horace Wells, he was a dentist, was in Connecticut, and he went to a show where they used laughing gas, and he witnessed this guy under the influence of laughing gas up on stage fighting and telling jokes and whatnot, and he came back to his seat, and there was blood underneath his chair, and he realized, Dr. Horace Wells realized that this gentleman had cut his leg open pretty badly, but the guy hadn't felt anything, right? And so, boom, a light went off in Dr. Horace Wells' head and said, wow, what if I use this laughing gas when I'm trying to extract teeth from my patients? Because you can imagine before anesthesia, it's a pretty painful thing. They'd probably use like medicinal herbs, ice, alcohol, or any combination thereof. So, again, a situation where he thought creatively about how to solve the problem of pain. This guy named George de Mestral invented Velcro in a novel way. In the 1940s, while he was hunting in Switzerland with his dog, he wondered how these like cockle burrs got stuck to his pants and the dog's fur. And so he looked at that carefully and closely and realized, oh, I got a hook and I got a loop, right? So I wonder if I could kind of manufacture this. And that's the beginnings of Velcro.
I mean, that's amazing. And that, in both of those examples, I think what you're saying is there's the creativity. I see a new choice. I see something different.
Yep.
But then the critical thinking comes in when you, like with the laughing gas, the right amount. How much do you need for this amount of time? So if the patient has to be unconscious, then I'm going back to maybe some science to help me apply that creativity right way.
That's a great way to think about it. Yeah.
And,
right.
And probably the Velcro guy the same way. He sees that. But then it took some intellect and cognition to design that exactly the right way, or to see, not just to see the practical use, but to design it in a way that it would be useful for people to use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like the way in which you stated that, the relationship between creative thinking and critical thinking. Yep.
And so what kind of examples have you seen in your past of, say, maybe a lack of critical thinking where, and maybe it's probably a lot, because I've seen a lot, where people maybe, we launched off using a faulty premise, or we didn't check a premise or something like that. So can you think of some examples that kind of fall into that category?
I can, yes. One of the things that you can do when you're putting forward an argument, and again, an argument is a set of claims, one of which is known as the conclusion, and it is supposed to follow from or be deduced from or be inferred from another claim known as a premise. When in fact, you draw a conclusion from premises when you should not be doing that, that's called committing a fallacy, right? So I had a bad meal at Jake's restaurant. Therefore, I conclude all meals at Jake's restaurants are bad, right? You can see how that doesn't follow, that all meals at Jake's restaurant are bad just because I had one bad meal, right? So, that's an example of a hasty or false generalization. Any kind of prejudice, any kind of stereotyping uses the fallacy of hasty or false generalization.
That'd be like only lazy people work at this restaurant.
Right, because I saw one person lazy either. Or like purple people are mean-spirited, you might say, I met a purple person and he was mean-spirited, lazy, good for nothing. Therefore, all purple people are lazy, good for nothing, mean-spirited, that kind of thing. Yeah. So we do that constantly. We do it all the time. We hastily generalize, and we shouldn't. And I've witnessed that many a time, you know, in different organizations I've worked for with the Army. It's like, this person is an Army civilian professional. They're all this way, right? You know, or this person's a green suitor coming in rotation. Well, we know they're all going to be, you know, we know that we can already prejudge that this person is going to be clueless about X, Y, and Z because they're all clueless about X, Y, and Z when they come into the organization, you know, that kind of thing. And we just got to be careful not to hastily generalize. So this true story, after work one day over at Mission Command Seated, my car would not start. I popped the hood and a coworker came by and he said, it's either the starter is shot or the battery is dead. So we checked the lights, radio, and determined it was not the battery. Thus, we concluded it was the starter, but we were both wrong. So that set up a false dichotomy or false dilemma. It was either the starter or the battery. We were both wrong. It was the third thing that we had not considered. That was the alternator that was the culprit. So we do that a lot, too. We limit our choices to maybe like one or two or three or four things, and we don't realize, and then we rule out three of those four and then draw a conclusion, and there's another factor that we haven't considered.
And if that's been my experience, so I'm thinking back 15 years, and every time my car's acted like that, it was either the starter or the battery.
Yeah.
If that's my experience, that's what I think now. And like you're saying, that sometimes that's not right.
That's right.
Our experience informs us, but it doesn't predict the future.
That's right. And the reasoning we utilized in the past, we got to make sure we're kind of fresh and always on top of things. Doesn't mean it's going to be good for the future or good for this present situation. And that's part of being a critical thinker, too, is kind of realizing just what you said, namely the kind of reasoning we utilize in the past may not work in the present situation or in the future.
And then we have error blindness, I believe it's called, which is where, yep. Okay, it's either the starter or the battery. Well, we check both of those and it's not that. No, it has to be, because I said it was one of those two and I'm not going to be wrong. Sometimes we get people get stubborn and dig their heels in.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, with error blindness. I got you. Yeah. So we're human beings. We have egos. We have emotions. And a lot of times fallacies are committed because of the emotion and bias and our ego. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I know my wife and my daughter have gone through something really interesting over the past, I'll say, 2 years. My wife's a horseback rider. My daughter is also. And it's with the horse's feet. So they were working on an assumption for years that you had to have someone professional and trained to come, and you had to have horseshoes. So you pay somebody to come trim the horse's feet and put the horseshoes on. And both of them were frequently experiencing dissatisfaction with the farriers. So the assumption is they have to do it. And so you're trying to convince them, you know, work on my horse this way. And then about 2 years ago, my wife started talking to people on Facebook who said, no, you can do it yourself. It's not that difficult. You know your horse better. And so $500 worth of equipment, the trimmers and all that stuff. And so they both do their horse's feet. So I guess what I'm saying is they had worked on this assumption for decades that you had to have someone else do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found that was, I guess that would be a faulty premise or a maybe a false dichotomy that you either don't have it done or you have to have this person done.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And interestingly enough, there's a little bit of creative thinking there, right? Thinking outside the box,
right?
Literally, right? They were kind of stuck in this either one this way or that way, and something jarred them out of that. And it happened to be the blogging or the online?
Yeah, on Facebook. Just
Facebook, yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting. It's fascinating. Always being open to new information, adjusting our beliefs is part of being a critical thinker and a creative thinker too.
Yeah, and we were talking, I just recorded a podcast with Dennis Branson. We were talking about conflict. And we kind of use that analogy about fish and water, that fish don't know what water is because they live in it. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we're not aware of just the assumptions that we make about our lives, because it's how we've always lived. And then somebody says, hey, do you really have to do that? And after maybe some critical thinking, you realize, no, I don't. That's not successful. What I've been doing for 15, 20 years isn't working. Maybe it's in an organization. You know, we find we're just beating our heads against the wall to solve a problem. And then maybe somebody like you that comes in from the outside and says, you know, isn't there kind of a different way to go about this? And that's I've heard that referred to as the odd man in concept, where somebody who's not mired in the convention can come in and see things in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, I was hired to do government work because of that. Yeah. And speaking of lack of critical thinking, something that I would hear regularly, and we probably still hear it, is, we've never done it that way. Therefore, we shouldn't do it that way. That's a fallacy, right?
Absolutely.
That's related to what you're just saying here, right? The new person comes in and says, hey, maybe we could try doing it this way, and it could be better for the organization, but, you know, you got the naysayers. So logically, they're screwing up because they're creating fallacies, and practically, they're screwing up the organization because maybe the process is continuing to do so, to go forward inefficiently, right? So they're and maybe even ethically, there could be a problem too. So it's interesting how critical thinking affects all of our areas of our lives.
And it's sometimes it's fear that prevents us from, like you said, well, we've never done it that way.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that what's really underneath that is fear.
Yeah, I'm going to lose my job, or I'm going to do something new I don't know anything about, so I fear it, it's unknown, all those things.
Yeah, if I recommend we do something different and it doesn't turn out great, then everybody hates me now or something like
that.
So there's always that fear. But,
yeah,
you know, if we were never willing to try different things, we'd still be living in caves with, deer skins on.
That's right. You know, another example, when I was working at MCC, it's all about capability development, and specifically MC stands for Mission Command. So we were trying to develop the next Mission Command information system. And when commanders are out and about in theater and in operations and whatnot, they want to have a good, what is known as situational awareness of what the heck's going on in the
right
operational environment. So there used to be something called the Command Post of the Future, which is the Mission Command Information System. And I was working almost 10 years ago on developing the next generation CPOF, which is called something like Mission Command Computing Environment now or something like that. So the stuff that I was working on with other folks made it into what is now fielded as the Mission Command Information System. So it's really a lot of fun, actually. But when we were working with the capability developers, people would set up these false dichotomies, and one of them went like this. Either we do what the user wants, right, in terms of the people who are going to be using the Mission Command Information System, or we do what the software designer thinks is best, right? And if you listen to Steve Jobs, the user doesn't know what he or she wants until we tell him, right? We being software designer Jobs. And also there's a quotation that's attributed to Ford. We don't know if it's true or not, but he said something like, you know, if we asked the people what they want, if we would have done that, then they would have said faster horses rather than automobiles, right?
Right.
So the idea here is either we do what the user wants or we do what the software designer thinks is best. Well, we don't want to do what the user wants because they don't know what the heck they want, right?
Right.
They're just ignorant. So we do what the software designer thinks is best. Well, what ultimately happened was the software designer is totally disconnected from the user. We did what the software designer thinks is best, and then the user just doesn't use the product, right? So there was a third option that we had not seriously considered, and believe it or not, we could do both the user want and what the software designer thinks is best. So we set up meetings between CPOF users and our capability developers, sent out surveys, sat with CPOF users to go through exercises, et cetera. And so that kind of resulted in a better product, we think. So again, the false dichotomy was either we do what the user wants exclusively or we do what the software designer wants, right? But there's a third option. Why don't we do a little bit of both?
Right.
And so we had to kind of come to that the hard way. And so those are some examples of lack of critical thinking. My personal example with my car, the organizational example with the Mission Command Information System.
Yeah. So what else about critical thinking? What kind of things do you see in the classroom? Because we have a lesson in the program mm-hmm. that you and I teach in. What do you think is the key ingredient of that, and kind of what do you see? How do you see the students react to that?
Well, in many ways, the concepts associated with critical thinking, it's kind of like learning math in a new language at the same time. So. This is one of the reasons why I think you should teach critical thinking starting in like grade school, you know, at the end of grade school, definitely in high school. I don't know why we wait till college to do it. But students, I see that implicitly they understand what's going on because I think implicitly people critically think. It's just that in the classroom, I'm making those principles explicit. So it's kind of like, you know, something new for them. It's new in that the concepts are being made explicit. It's not new in that implicitly they're like, oh, yeah, I get it, right? So as human beings, we can all do critical thinking. It's just a matter of being aware of what it entails and then exercising, practicing. This is the math and learning a new language part, doing that regularly. So I tell them to buy my new book, which is a third edition of Critical Thinking, which will be coming out soon. So, yeah, I've got a textbook that's now going to be a third edition. It's called Critical Thinking and an Introduction to Reasoning Well.
That's excellent.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. So
if I read that textbook, will I learn more about your car?
Yes, you will.
All right. Well, Dr. Robert Arp, I really appreciate you giving up your time today and coming and being a guest on Leader Up. You're a good friend. I always enjoy working with you, and I know our audience has benefited from hearing you today. So is there anything else that you want to add about critical thinking? I don't want to cut you off.
No, I just think you're a spectacular dude too, man. So this is great. No, I really appreciate it. And I'll help anyone give you information about critical thinking, creative thinking, anything you need, any help, any assistance I can provide, it'd be great. So,
and thank you again. I appreciate you coming and talking to our audience today. And so, Leader Up audience, what you hear today that that's kind of resonating with you? Do you think you have an aptitude for creative thinking and critical thinking? And can you see times when those two things are related in your workplace? And so, is there something that you need to do to make yourself maybe more creative, but a little more open-minded, or maybe a little more critical thinking, a little more disciplined and focused with your thinking? So just think about that. And I would like to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube page and join us again next time for another edition of Leader Up.
As always, if you have any questions or feedback or would like to learn more about our podcast, please check the description for our email and for our website. Thanks for listening.